Welcome back, one and all, to the Layman's Law School, where everybody gets in. Tuition is free. There are no tests, and you can come to class without your pants on. My name is Chase Hawk. I'm the host, along with Reed Sanders, and we have a guest host today.
Special guest host.
Yeah, the founder of the Hawk Law Group, Victor Hawk. Welcome, sir.
Not meaning special in a certain way. Special guest.
You're a little bit special today.
Yeah, I mean, that's debatable.
Yeah.
It's debatable.
But it's Friday, and we're going to start off how we always do.
There you go. We celebrate.
Getting through another week.
I think I should go first today.
Okay.
Yes.
Because this is a special one. Yeah, yeah. This is a special one. I knew Vic was coming. So, like I always tell you, when you really try to encapsulate alcohol, you want it in a dark place.
Okay.
And so the best way for beer to really savor the flavor is in a dark black plastic bag. Anything else, then it seeps through the metal. It gets, you know, you waste and stuff. I brought this today. Now this is, it was, the 97 spring is the best, right? This is 96 fall.
So this is
fantastic. And now, that's another thing. You never want to open the bag from the top where you sealed it. You got to open it to let all the aroma out. Now, that one's for you.
Thank you very much.
Chase, that's yours.
This is just like a Bud Light.
It is. It's the fall of 96.
Oh,
and it's been you hear that? Yeah, let's get
it. Oh, my God.
It's the choice.
You got to do it close to the mic here.
All right, here we go.
Oh, yeah. Now.
Here we go.
Here's cheers to another good week, fellas.
Yeah.
Jordan, as always.
Yeah, helping people.
How dare you, sir?
Woo. Can you taste that?
Mm.
Can you taste those nodes?
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
That was great.
Yeah.
Good.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Oh, now it's going to get
warm. Now, for the true treat, we have Tally Ho Bourbon Whiskey. This is out of the Carolina Moon Distillery right here. In Edgefield, South Carolina.
Nice.
Yeah.
Ooh, good Lord. What are we doing?
I want everybody to know this is the end of our week. We've enjoyed helping everybody.
We've enjoyed helping everybody all week long, and we're looking forward to a free, enjoyable weekend with our families, and we're starting it off right.
That's right. That's what you do. Everybody has, you know, we got a lot of work, a lot of pressure. So, you know, enjoy a little time off.
That's right.
There you go.
Thank you.
This is actually Monday morning, 10 o'clock.
Cheers.
All right.
Well, this is going to be
one of my favorite shows, I know, because we are going to be breaking down one of my favorite movies.
All right. What we got?
My Cousin Vinny.
Ah.
Okay. We're going to be breaking this down, all the little scenes for legal realism, and just sort of tips and tricks for lawyers out there. We're going to let you know, yeah, that's right. That's how it actually happens. Or no, that would never happen that way. And really, My Cousin Vinny is an actual great movie for lawyers to watch, because there actually is some pretty good lawyering that's going on in it. So, yeah.
And I even look like Vinny.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think
that's what I've been told. Okay. That's what I've been told.
Maybe in the courtroom. Towards the end.
Yeah.
Or, not at the beginning.
Well, we're going to talk about the attire in a little bit. Okay. As you know.
All right. Well, so without further ado, we can bring up the first clip. But what's happening is we got Yankees driving across the South from New York to go to UCLA.
Sure.
And so they've gone into a convenience store, and somebody has inadvertently put a can of tuna in their pocket without paying for it. Now they notice there's a cop behind them. You can go ahead and play it there, Jimothy.
What are we going to do now?
It's probably nothing, all right? Might be a taillight or something. Just relax.
We don't have any money for bail.
Bail? We don't need money for bail. Nothing's happened. Now, just relax.
Nothing. We're getting pulled over, aren't we? You stole something, didn't you? You're finished.
Shut up, all right? All right, here he comes.
Show me your hands!
Jesus.
Show me your hands!
All right, so here, the circumstances we have here is that a convenience store clerk has just been murdered. A convenience store that they just left.
Right.
Just a little while ago.
The officer knows that, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so the question becomes, can the police officer pull them over, number one, and can he tell them to get out of the car?
I think the elder Mr. Hawk. Yeah, what do you think, buddy?
I think if there's a description of the car and there's a description of two males, and they're in close proximity to the robbery and killing, he has probable cause to at least make an investigatory stop. At that point in time, I was surprised he pulled a shotgun.
That's my question to you, but you've done criminal defense work for a long time. You don't do it anymore, but you used to.
Yeah.
What kind of crimes are that the officer would be allowed to pull the gun and say, you know, this is a dangerous person?
Right.
Obviously, it can't be, you know, jaywalking.
Right.
There has to be some kind of line. Right. What's the line there?
Yeah. Well, for example, in this case, they have information that there's been a killing.
Right.
And a reasonable expectation would be that those who committed the robbery would have weapons, and they were dangerous.
Right.
And so that would justify the police officer pulling the gun, making sure that he's safe, and making sure that these defendants raise their hand.
Right.
If they don't do that, then he would be on very high alert that he's about to have a shootout.
Right.
When we visited Brazil, one of the things that occurred whenever you were stopped in Brazil, the first thing you had to do was raise your hands.
Right.
Because the officer wants to be safe and the people in the car want to be safe. So if they had information that it was a robbery with the use of a weapon or murder with the use of a weapon, I'd be pulling that gun.
Right, that's right.
So the actual legal issue, or I guess right, the main one that we're watching actually play out in real time here is the Fourth Amendment, the illegal, the right for you not to be stopped by the police and illegally searched and seized. And so there are certain circumstances under which the government can do these things to you. They can stop you. They can ask you to get out of your car. And one of the recognized things is whether or not the person has a reasonable, articulable suspicion that you've committed a crime.
That's right.
And then number two, him getting him out of the car relates to officer safety, getting them away from the vehicle, where so many officers actually get into trouble is when a person pulls something out of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so asking them to get out was well within the police officers, I think, purview.
And I'll add this, Chase. The practical, you know, application to this for folks out there, if you get pulled over and you haven't done anything, and you know you haven't done anything, you still need to follow the officer's orders. And because the fight, let's say you're 100% right, and the officer didn't even think there was a murder, he just didn't like you.
Right.
The fight isn't won on the street.
Right.
It's won in the courtroom.
That's right.
And so if you don't do what the officer says, then there becomes a fight or somebody gets hurt or whatever. Right. It's kind of like my dad always used to say, you can be right and you can also be dead.
Yeah.
There's a time to go about it. And
right.
So if the officer is being unjust, that's going to come out.
Right.
But it's not at the time of the stop.
Yeah. I think a misconception that the public has is just what you referred to, that the public does not have to comply with an officer's commands. If the officer has reason to believe that you have committed a crime or are committing a crime, he can issue commands and you have to obey them, including identifying yourself, showing your license, showing your insurance, showing your hands, and not acting in a way that's a physical threat to the police officer.
But I know at the same time, so when you do those things and the officer is not correct, we've had those cases, but it's after the fact.
Absolutely.
It can't be done. I have so many people that call me all the time and said, or even on the street, while the officer's there, I'm like, well, just do what he said. If he's doing something wrong, he's going to be punished. I can guarantee, but it's not going to be on the street.
Yeah, the best advice to give is be safe first.
Correct.
Be safe for yourself. Be safe for the officer. That is a incidental intrusion in your privacy, and it's made under circumstances that could be right, could be wrong, but both of you want to survive the meeting.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, so don't escalate it by being a horse's butt.
You can say ass.
It's a podcast. We're all right.
All right, Beth, can we play the next one?
Roll it.
Yeah. I'm sure it's number 3 and 5.
It'll come back.
Yeah. So, all right. So we got a lineup here. This is a classic lineup where the, you know, it's a big piece of evidence in any case like this where witnesses maybe get to identify the actual defendant in the case and can become very, very important evidence in the case.
This is a classic situation where it's impermissibly suggestive. They have a basic...
And what does that mean?
What does that mean? That's a good question. That means that if they know the potential defendants are dressed in all black or with black with just one other color, and they put all the others in the lineup with different colors, different shades of color, then that's impermissibly suggestive. If the lineup is one where the potential defendants are 6 feet tall and they put in five other individuals, but one is 5 feet tall, one is 6 feet tall, one's 6'3", one's close to 6'6", or 6'5". That's impermissibly...
Those numbers don't reach me and you, Vic. We don't have to talk about those numbers. That's why you stumbled over it. We don't get over about 5'3" or 5'4".
That's right. They would have to go through a lot of photograph books to get one to match my height, for sure.
I think this guy's on his knees anyway, so that one doesn't even count.
Yeah. Right. So that's impermissibly suggestive in advance. The police officers, when they made the stop, would have given a description of the suspects,
right,
about size, about the color of the clothes that they have on.
How about ethnicity?
They would have done ethnicity. And the police officers in charge of the lineup are supposed to go through and identify those individuals that would most closely resemble them, because misidentification is the easiest possible thing to occur in a criminal prosecution.
Right.
I had one where a guy was charged with rape of a beautiful girl, and he looked like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. He made one visit every 6 months to Augusta for his schizophrenic medicine. Mm-hmm. And the only way we were able to prove he was innocent was we subpoenaed bank records and he cashed a check for $1 in Norcross, Georgia, 10 minutes before the girl was raped. And she was positive in her identification. So it's very common that eyewitnesses will misidentify someone, and it's pretty easy to fix it so that you get an identification.
What about the having both of them in the same lineup?
Well, I'm just going to assume the police officer says, "Do any of these two?
Right?
Do you see two of them in there that were involved in the sack of suds? Wasn't it sack of suds?
Convenience store.
I've seen that happen before. Yeah, that's really, really bad.
Yeah,
and it takes a really good lawyer to win a motion on something like that, because the judges generally try to protect the police officers.
And that goes to what the law is and what the practical side is. The practical side is the judge is going to err on the state side. Right. He just is. It's just going to happen.
Let a jury decide it. Unless it's a civil case.
Right. Then it's a little different.
Yeah, and in this situation, and basically what would happen is any evidence of the actual identification, if it's done in this kind of way where it's overly suggestive, unnecessarily suggestive of a particular group here, and like you said, these guys are right in the sweet spot. They're between 5 foot and 5'6". Everybody is either below 5 foot or right at 5 foot.
And dressed differently.
These guys are dressed exactly like the suspects, right in the sweet spot. This is overly suggestive, and so there would be a motion to exclude any evidence of positive identification, and they would not be able to use that at trial. Right. Could they still charge these guys?
Absolutely, but
it's going to exclude that evidence.
But I will say it should exclude the evidence. It should exclude the evidence.
That's true, but the practical application of it.
And that's kind of the stories in the small town. I don't know if it's Georgia or Alabama or wherever, but a small southern town.
Right.
And I've grown up in a small southern town, and it happens.
Yeah. Right. All right, so let's go on to the next little clip here. And I think this is mostly related to just a fun fact that I actually know. Yeah. So this is set in Beecham County, Alabama. Okay. Right? I think they just tried to make it more country, but I personally think Monticello, Georgia is plenty
sure,
country.
Sure, that's where Sack of Suds is, right?
That's exactly right. This is where all this is, where Sack of Suds is. That's where this courthouse is. So if you look at this downtown area, you can go visit this if you're near Monticello, Georgia. I go through it every time I go to my mother-in-law's place in Griffin, Georgia, that courthouse right there. You can still go see that. Cool, yeah. You can go to the Sack of Suds.
I've been to the Sack of Suds.
On Highway 16, it is still there.
Yeah.
You can go there and buy you a Sack of Suds hat.
My cousin Denny has probably kept that place in business for many years.
Absolutely. You can go there and buy a $10 can of tuna fish.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, because it has a little Sack of Suds tuna fish on there. But this is him arriving in Beecham County, and he is a New York attorney.
Right.
So with the next clip
an attorney used loosely at this point.
Yeah,
in time. At this point,
that's
time.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. He is one.
He is 100%. One. Yeah.
And this is one of my favorite characters in the whole thing, Judge Chamberlain Holler.
And with, okay. And with all due respect to this man, he reminds me of Judge Dunaway in McDuffie County.
He has
the same kind of mannerisms, the same tone, no nonsense judge. Right. And Judge Dunaway was a great judge. But as a kid, I grew up with Judge Dunaway, and watching this movie, I'm going, that's the guy.
Yeah,
that's what judges are. That's what judges are.
But I just love this guy in this role. Go ahead.
A little informal, aren't we?
I was just resting.
Not wearing a coat or tie.
Oh, sorry.
Well, approving an attorney from out of state is a pretty informal matter. I just have a few questions.
Okay, fire away, Judge.
Where'd you go to law school?
Brooklyn Academy of Law.
Is that an accredited law school?
Yes.
How long have you been practicing?
Oh, about almost 16 years.
Any murder cases?
Lots. Quite a few, yes.
And what was the outcome?
Win some, lose some. I couldn't
stop it. All right, so the judge right there is starting to set the tone for how he's going to be sort of addressed and the seriousness with which he sort of takes this. Every judge is a little bit different,
sure.
But I have to say that a lot of them are just like this, very, not necessarily, he comes across as cranky.
Right.
But what he's doing is kind of protecting the integrity of that court. But what's interesting is he's coming from New York. This is Beecham County, Alabama.
Right.
How is it that Beecham County, Alabama is going to allow him to actually practice law in Beecham County? How is that? What is that
process? He's only licensed in New York. I mean, how are we doing this?
Yeah. It's very common, very common. I went to law school in Alabama, so I love me some Alabama. And if they're in Beecham County, Alabama, the rules are the same throughout the state. You can apply for what's called Pro Hac Vici, where you are admitted to practice in Alabama, even though you're not licensed in Alabama, if you're licensed and in good standing in the state that you come from.
Right.
And you have to have an Alabama lawyer present you to the court for consideration, and if the court approves it, then you're allowed to practice. And I found that when I go into South Carolina, I go into Florida, I go into Alabama, I make sure I have me a Alabama, Florida, and South Carolina lawyer sitting there beside me, because there are little nuances as a trial attorney that you have to have.
Right.
And you're going to miss them if you don't have a local lawyer working with you.
Vic, for the explaining the law and the rules and stuff. So that is only for one case, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And different.
So you may have back-to-back cases with the same judge, and you have to apply again.
That's right. And you pay in South Carolina, it costs you $400. In Alabama, $600. In Florida, I did it a long time ago. I think it was like $550. And they can pretty much set the fee.
Want.
Yeah. So, but it's very common for lawyers from other states to come in and practice in a particular case.
Right. So in this particular situation, this is a little more less formal than the actual process, right? Yeah. So they're going to check up on you're going to get a letter from the bar that he's in good standing.
If you have a movie, it would be 4 hours. They had to cut something.
Yeah, I got you. He said it's a little bit of an informal matter. It's informal.
Right.
It's not that informal.
And I will say this too. So I know and I don't know about other states, but Georgia. So even if you're a licensed in Georgia, there's certain cases that you can't. Do unless you have an experienced lawyer with you. And so that was one of the other questions the judge asked. Have you had any murder cases?
Sure.
I know in Georgia in death penalty cases, if you haven't done a death penalty case, you have to have somebody who's done a death penalty case with you. Even if you're in good standing and practice for 50 years, got to have somebody with you.
That's right. Yeah. And that's because they want to protect the rights of the parties involved, and they want to make sure that everything is done correctly the first time, because it costs the public a lot of money to try a case.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so we can go to the next clip here.
Counselor, your clients are charged with first-degree murder. How'd they plead?
Ayana, my client...
Don't talk to me sitting in that chair.
He told me to sit here.
When you're addressing this court, you will rise and speak to me in a clear, intelligible voice.
Sorry.
Go ahead and stop it right there. All right. To start off with, there's a lot going on here to start off with. All right, so what you'll notice is you got the prosecutor that's sitting in a tie and coat. The sheriff is in a tie and coat. Chamberlain hollers up there in his robe. He's up and above everybody.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that struck me about this, and part of why he's so upset, is that in these institutions, the courtroom, a surgical theater, right? There are things you do. You go to church.
Right.
It's Sunday. You know, you're taking communion.
Sunday best. It's a common phrase.
Right.
Sunday best. Wear your Sunday best.
Right. Because it's a signal that what goes on there is sacred and important.
Right.
Right. And what you're about to see is what you're watching here is a judge seeing a person do something that's out of line,
right.
That does not show correct.
The pageantry.
Now, Vinny doesn't understand it.
He's not doing it intentionally.
He's a little lost to that. But when judges get upset, it's not because they're a cranky person or a jerk.
Right.
It's just that they're just not going to sit back and allow an individual to come in and threaten the integrity of Beeching County Courthouse
or that judge's courthouse. I'll give you a personal story on that. I'd been working for you, but I just got my bar results, whatever. It may have been 2 or 3 months in, and I was handling a case for you, and it was in state court with Judge Booker. Love Judge Booker. She's great. And so I'd been an attorney for maybe 3 months, maybe. Yeah. But I had to go to state court and do some stuff. And she was speaking, and as she's speaking, I wasn't part of the case. You know, I was walking around talking to clients and trying to arrange stuff. But she's talking, and I'm walking out, and she jumped me a little bit and then, you know, explained to me, and that's what the judge was doing there. When it's your turn to talk, you have to stand up. When the judge is talking, you're not walking around. You're not moving around.
I didn't know that.
So she was very kind about it, and I went and apologized later to her, and she's been great throughout my career. But that just shows you. I mean, they don't teach you that in law school.
No.
They don't. That's something that's sink or swim there.
Yeah, so. And every judge is a little bit different.
Sure.
It's allowed a little bit different sort of
And
that's
what I mean. Judge Booker could have really hammered me. She did not do that. She was very nice.
Let's play the rest of this one, and I think Victor's got a story.
What are you wearing?
Huh?
What are you wearing?
I'm wearing clothes. I don't get the question.
When you come into my court looking like you do, you not only insult me, but you insult the integrity of this court.
I apologize, sir, but this is how I dress.
Next time you come into my courtroom, you will look lawyerly. And I mean, you comb your hair and wear a suit and tie. And that suit better be made out of some kind of cloth. You understand me?
Yes. Fine, Judge, fine.
Good. You may continue.
There you go. Yeah. And that's the correct response.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
in case you're wondering.
Very true.
Fine, Judge.
Yes, sir.
Fine. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Exactly. Yeah. So, Dad, have you had any problems in your past with dress code there? Sir?
I have. I have. Years ago, my wife gave me a leather jacket similar to Vinny's jacket and for Christmas. And I start trying a case, and the judge is just giving me a hard time left and right, objecting for the other side, ruling against me in any way he could, just mad as a hornet the whole time. So we reach lunch break, and I go up to his office. I follow him right into his office. I said, Judge, what did I do to hack you off? And he said, well, I think there are two things. One of them is you're too close to the jury. And I said, well, I work close to the jury. I want the jury to know what I'm doing and what I'm showing them and everything. And he said, two, you wearing a leather jacket. And I don't like leather jackets in my courtroom. And I said, well, that's never going to be a problem between us anymore. And, of course, from then on, for the next 15 years, I never wore a leather jacket in that judge's courtroom. Yeah. I had the tie on. I wasn't as bad as Benny here, but I did have a leather jacket on. And it doesn't matter whether it's a Christmas present or not. He didn't want Christmas presents in his courroom.
And that's just his purview. He can make a decision if he wants.
And I guess that's a very, very practical point is you might hate it, you might agree with it, you might like it, whatever. It's the judge's his room. It's his courtroom, and if you want to be successful, you got to follow the rules. Absolutely. And you might disagree with the rules, but them the rules.
When a judge says, this is the rule we're going to follow, mm-hmm. you just need to say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and follow that rule,
right.
period.
And you perfect the record. And
that's right.
The record
you
means
can disagree.
You can disagree and say, but judge, I want to make sure this is taken down.
Yeah,
and then you carry on because that preserves the right to appeal. You taught me that a long time ago. You can disagree, but don't let it upset you. And put it on the record, move on.
Yeah, you could scream and yell at the judge, but when the record comes out, it says, Judge, you are a jerk, all right? But so you lose all the emotion. So all you would do is say, Judge, I'd like to preserve an objection, and I object to your demanding that I not wear a leather jacket, even though I wore it with a tie. Mm. And then he'll say, okay, you preserved it. He's fine, but you better not wear that leather
jacket.
Exactly,
exactly.
All right, let's go ahead and skip ahead to 1-13-07.
Your Honor, counsel, members of the jury, the evidence in this case is going to show that at 9:30 in the morning of January 4th, both defendants, Stanley Rothenstein and William Gambini, were seen getting out of their metallic green 1964 Buick Skylark convertible with a white top. The evidence is going to show that they were seen entering the Sack of Suds convenience store in Wazoo City. The evidence is going to show that minutes after they entered the Sack of Suds, a gunshot was heard by three eyewitnesses. You're going to then hear the testimony of the three eyewitnesses who saw the defendants running out of the Sack of Suds a moment after the shots were heard, getting into their faded metallic green 1964 Buick Skylark and driving off in great haste. Finally, the state is going to prove that the defendants, Gambini and Rothenstein, admitted, then recanted their testimony to the sheriff of Beecham County.
All right, so what's he doing well right here already? What do you see?
Oh, he's telling the stories, creating images for the jury to appreciate, and he's doing it in a very simple way.
Well, so this is the opening.
Yeah.
What are the rules? Talk about kind of what you can and can't do, and what's good about what he's doing.
Well, these are all the rules I break. you're not allowed to argue your case in front of the jury. You're not allowed to, I guess, give your version of or interpretation of the facts.
Yeah,
but you are allowed to tell your story.
Yeah. Well, let's can we fast forward real quick?
Everything that guy just said is bullshit. Thank you.
All right, pause it there.
You can pause it there. All right, so that would be an example of an interpretation.
That's right. And I, you know, when I was
why would that not be allowed?
Because that is not evidence that you reasonably expect a witness to testify to. And they certainly wouldn't testify in the way that he described it. But you could say as part of your story, their witnesses are going to lie. And they're going to lie in these ways. They're going to say they saw things that they didn't. Mm-hmm. They're going to ignore obstructions to their view. Mm-hmm. They're going to exaggerate, mm-hmm. and you can say stuff like that. But you can't
to say stuff like that. You would have to have a witness
to confirm that. Okay. Like I think I learned in Alabama before I ever got out of law school. There was this old guy in some hush puppies, mm-hmm. who gave his opening statement. And, of course, we were always taught you just, outline the facts of the case.
Sure.
And it was a great rendition, kind of like the prosecutor's rendition of a story that created a picture.
Right.
And he was very excited about it and emotional.
Right.
And I said, Mr. Smith, I said, in law school, they teach us you can't do that.
Yeah.
He said, there is nothing in the rule book anywhere that says you can't get excited about your side.
That's right. Well, Vic, I want to ask you one other thing on the same topic. So I've been with you a long time, and your kind of rule is you keep going until the judge tells you to stop.
Yeah.
Would that be fair to say?
That'd be fair to say. If I don't make the other side object to what I'm doing because I'm hurting their case, then I'm not doing my job.
Right.
And if the judge agrees with them, I'll tell the judge, thank you very much. I won't do it again.
Sure.
Then I'll do something else.
Right.
That may or may not break the rule.
And that's the practical side. You got to push that line.
Absolutely. You got to stay on that line, dance on it, put your toes over, and every once in a while you step.
And then if they call you on it, then you don't do it again.
That's right. That's right.
I, as the rule follower of the Hawk Larder, do not condone any of this conduct.
I'm saying it's not misconduct. It's language is an art form.
Right.
You agree. All of us agree with that.
Yeah.
So there's that gray area of, are you talking about the facts or are you talking your side of the case?
Mm-hmm. I was in a trial with Judge Alamo, one of the greatest federal judges that ever was ever covering our circuit, our district. And I was giving opening statement, and the other side objected. And the other side said, Mr. Hawk is doing so-and-so, and that's wrong, you shouldn't do that, and that kind of thing. And Judge Alamo looked at me, looked over his glasses, kind of like this judge and my cousin Vinny, and he said, well, Mr. Hawk, what do you have to say in response to that? And I said, well, I think he's right. And Judge Alamo says, well, will you not do it again? And I said, no, I won't do it again.
In my last trial in Aiken County, I went home that night because we'd done Oaken arguments and everything, and I was asking my wife, because she came to watch, how I did and all that. And she said, I think you did good. And I said, why do you think I did good? And I said, because your dad was sitting next to me the whole time. And during your open argument, they objected three times. and he leaned over me and he said, he's dancing on the line.
He's dancing on the line. He's dancing on the line.
And he's like, I dance on it all the time. Well, I think we're going to have to end this one here. We're out of time today. We'll finish up next time.
Well, we will definitely bring the founder of the Hawk Law Group, our true dear friend and your father, back on, because he's got a lot of history and a lot of good information legally and practically for everybody out there.
Well, I've certainly enjoyed this, and all these lawyers that we work with care about people, and these are two founding sons here that
well, we appreciate
created
that.
This. It's good stuff.
All right. Well, thank you all very much for watching. See you next time.